There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.
We're doing a bit of travelling now to take a look at some of the stories that we spotted and thought, you have got to be kidding me.
So what did I miss? What did I miss?
Now, I'm a big fan of Airbnb. I like to use it when I travel.
Yeah.
I've got a property that I rent out on Airbnb. It gives me everything I need when it comes to travelling. But for one couple, it didn't provide exactly what they wanted from their travel experiences.
Oh, really?
So, yeah, they had to start their own booking platform.
I said, it's getting hot in here, so, hot. So take off all your clothes.
I am getting so hot, I want to take my clothes.
Is this going where you think it is? Yes, it is. Yes, it is.
Is it really? It's gone in a very strange direction, is this story, isn't it?
Well, Petri and Mina Karjalainen, they are the co-founders of Naturist B&B. Now, not to be confused with Naturalist B&B, which I was talking about upstairs before.
That's totally different.
They're just like the birds, like bird sounds.
Totally different.
It's something different. Mm. It's basically just like Airbnb, but everyone's suitcases are empty.
So they don't take anything to change?
Hairbrush.
Okay.
I can't think of anything else,
toothbrush,
really.
Toothbrush, maybe some toothpaste.
That's about it.
Yeah.
So the couple came up with this idea after having an unsuccessful experience hosting a clothing optional homestay on Airbnb. I would kill to know what happened there, but I don't know. I don't know what the experience is. What could have happened, do you think, that went wrong? Someone turned up?
Possibly. it doesn't bear thinking about, does it? You know, the imagination can go in so many different directions with this story.
Well, Petri says on our website, all of the properties are targeted for the naturist lifestyle practicing people. So you can't get confused and turn up at one of these places by accident.
Well, that's good to know. Now, if you rented your house out, would you be happy to do this on your site? I mean, as you mentioned at the start, you rent your place out in Scotland. I mean, would it be okay for you to do
this? I've got concerns.
I'm sure you will. I'd have a lot of concerns.
Like what, though? Because the first things that came to my mind were heating bills are going to go up.
Yeah.
And the sofa, sitting on the sofa.
Yeah. Washing bills are going to come down, though, aren't they? Laundry.
That's a really good point, actually. That could offset, couldn't it?
Mm. So the heating,
it's just the sofa,
the
really.
Laundry offsets the heating.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sofa, dining chairs.
Yeah, I get where you're coming from.
Higher kitchen table, that kind of thing.
Yeah, and what about the neighbours? Have you got any neighbours?
Yeah, there are, actually.
Right, I mean, what would the neighbours say?
You could not do this in a place that's overlooked. Now, the website's only 2 months old. It's already had a lot of properties, though, that have gone on there, ranging from sailboats, tree houses, city breaks in London, Amsterdam, New York, places like that.
Okay.
If naturists want to come and stay at my place, I think I would tell them.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's pretty sound advice, don't you? Now, we're heading off to Egypt next. Well, there's none of that business going on, you'll be glad to know.
Have you ever been to Egypt?
I have been to Egypt, yeah. I've been to Cairo and walked the streets of Cairo.
Did you go to the pyramids?
Yes.
Oh, I would love to go to the pyramids. I've never got around to doing that. Could kick myself. But did you get bothered when you were there by street vendors trying to sell you stuff?
I got bothered badly.
Did you?
Yeah, because my hotel, I just turned right and I was in one of the souks. And it just became too much. They just wouldn't leave you alone. You couldn't browse anything, you know. And they're almost kind of getting hold of your clothes, dragging you in different directions to go and see stuff that you didn't want to buy anyway. And also, I mean, you mentioned the pyramids there, the souvenir sellers around by the pyramids. You're going to have issues there as well.
Did you end up buying anything in the end, or?
Yeah, I got some little brass pyramids, and
why do I think I've seen them? Have I seen them?
You might. Maybe I was. Did I sell them at the car boot sale?
Oh, that's where I've seen them.
Yeah.
I sold them at the car boot
yeah,
sale.
Yeah, I did. Yeah, I sold my little pyramids at the boot sale.
Did you make profit or take a loss?
I think I took a loss, but I was glad to see the back of them anyway.
Oh, well.
Didn't bring back great memories for me.
Well, here's the thing. Egypt have just passed a new law. Have you heard about this?
No, I haven't.
So it gives the authorities the power to fine street vendors who bother tourists like you were back in the day with your pyramids. Fines could raise as high as 10,000 Egyptian pounds, which equates to roughly 2,075 dirhams.
Okay.
And I've known people say that they've had a lot of harassment, especially when they've been to the pyramids. So this can only be good news for tourists. Will it be good for tourism, though? is it part of the experience, I was wondering, having not been there?
I mean, it could be part of the experience if it wasn't so aggressive. If it, you know, if it was genuine, kind of, you know, trying to outdo each other, and the bartering is always fun. But it, I don't know, it had a feeling when I was there anyway, and it's quite some time, probably about 10 years ago that I was there, it just felt a little bit heavy.
Did it?
Yeah, and you just wanted to get out of the place. You wanted to get out of there. And then another thing that happened to me, we were kind of on a tour, on a fixed tour, and the tour guide was obviously, you know, in with certain shops. So he would tell you which shop, he'd take you to a shop, which one to go in. And then the pressure, the sales pressure was just unbelievable. And, you know, if you were leaving saying, no, thanks very much, but, you know, the tour guide was almost kind of pushing me back in there, you know, to again. So, yeah, it was real heavy duty sales tactics, let's put it that way.
Because having not been, I was thinking, you know, the fabric souk, the gold souk here, when you go there and they shout names at you, have you had that?
Yeah.
What do they shout at you?
I get that. It's funny, every time I go down Karama, they always come up to me and say, handbag, sir? And I say, why are you trying to sell me a handbag? You know, what? Maybe a watch or a T-shirt, but why do you want a handbag? I never quite worked that one out, Steph.
I've had Shakira from across the street. Oh, Shakira! Come and have a look at this.
You don't look anything like Shakira.
I know. Simon, my husband, gets Johnny Depp. Hey, Johnny Depp!
You don't look anything like Johnny Depp.
It's weird, isn't it? Yeah, but we're knowing that you were going to be harassed at the pyramids have put you off. Did you know about this before you went?
No, I didn't know about it before I went.
Knowing it now?
It wouldn't put me off. No, I mean, you've got to go and see the pyramids. It's absolutely incredible. But just be ready to handle the pressure.
Not anymore, because there isn't going to be any pressure. But I was thinking there's a flip side to this, because a tour guide in Egypt had commented on this story, and he'd said that the new law is going to target the neediest sector of Egyptian society, because these people who are doing that need the money. They're not doing it because
they want to do it.
To harass people.
Exactly,
they really need the money. So is this then going to drive up crime? If they're not allowed to do this and sell souvenirs and push you into buying the souvenirs, how are they going to make money?
Yeah.
It's interesting,
good
isn't
point.
It?
It's a very good point. But yeah, don't put off going to the pyramids.
No.
Definitely not.
I won't. I'm definitely going to go and check them out. We've got more stories from around the world on the way. Did you have a Saturday job? If you did, we'd love to hear what it was. And we'd love to know especially if it taught you anything.
So what did I miss? What did I miss?
Now, do you travel for business? If you do, you might be interested in this next story.
Working.
That's a good little tune, isn't it? Dolly Parton's 9 to 5 there. Now, the modern business traveller isn't happy to be told where to go, when to go and where to stay without any input themselves.
We travel a little bit for work, don't we? Do you have any qualms when it comes to being sent off on a trip and told what you're going to do, exactly when, where you're going to stay?
Yeah, I kind of don't mind that. I like to know what I'm doing. I'm an itinerary kind of guy. I'm not the off-the-beaten-track person like you are.
But do you like an itinerary that none of it is your input whatsoever? You're going to another country. Yep, you've got stuff to do. But do you need a day where you can do your own stuff?
Oh, definitely, yeah. At some free time, for sure, yeah.
See, not a lot of people have that. They have to fly somewhere for work. They do the meeting.
Yeah.
They do the dinner and they fly back the next morning.
That's kind of frustrating, isn't it?
Yeah.
You should at least have one, you know, possibly 2 days to explore the city and, you know, do your own thing, as they say.
I think so too. Almost 4 out of 10 travel managers have reported an increase in concerns by staff about work-life balance. That's what it's all about, isn't it? With more than 1 in 3 saying that their workers inquired about adding a day or two of leisure. This is the bleisure phenomenon, the word that we hate.
I know, we don't like this word, do we?
Bleisure.
It was a very bleisurable experience, that trip. Now, interestingly, there was also a slight move away from workers demanding business class flights, with a rising demand for premium economy airfares or even basic economy seats.
Now, that's not me. I haven't made that move away. They've made that move away from me, I would say.
Right.
Remember, when we first started doing this job together 3 years ago and we'd go on work trips, obviously someone else is paying for them. You were being sent to a country to explore it and see the best of it.
Right.
Normally it would be, come to the lounge, get in your business class seat, enjoy getting to where you're going.
Mm-hmm.
It was probably about a year and a half ago that it changed to, it won't be business. Don't be ridiculous. The hope when that email came through, you'd look at it and you'd open it and go, oh God, is it going to be business? Oh, it's not business. Oh, it's all right. It's only a 16-hour flight during the night. You know what I mean? Yeah. Do you remember that change?
Yeah. Obviously, you know, that people have had to tighten their belts a little bit.
To tighten their belts.
Their seat belts. Especially.
If you are travelling for work, is it fair for you to ask for a couple of days to enjoy the destination that you're travelling to, do you think?
Well, I asked one of our contributors on the show, Shams, who's always travelling every single week. I don't know how he does it. He's off on a business trip.
Yeah.
So I put that very question to him.
I think it's definitely fair. The question, as stated, is something that, you know, we have to be able to, in today's environment, work with our workplace. We live in a world today that is so accommodating to remote workers, to working anytime, anywhere. We also work in a time today where it's not 8 to 5. It is, you know, we're available 24/7. Similarly, the work should also be, and I found that workplaces where I've worked have been very flexible. Now, everybody is saying we have to be responsible and mature adults about exploiting it or not exploiting it, right? Ideally, towards the side of not exploiting it. We have vacation days. Leverage that. So if we're in a beautiful destination, work brought us here, but this is how I would do it usually, and I do. I will mark off a couple of days of vacation and enjoy the space. Of course, the evenings, for example, in a light day at a site where I'm visiting are always going to be mine, so I can definitely enjoy that. And of course, I could also leverage weekends. So A, it is fair, and B, I do believe that there are ways that we can work around it. And C, last but not least, we live in a world today that the office and the employee really do have to work together. And the employees are already giving it. The offices should also reciprocate.
So he's up for a couple of extra days.
That's Shams from Dell, who comes on the show regularly to do Getting Techie, telling us what he thinks about adding extra days on when you have to go on a work trip. What do you think? If you are an employer, we would especially like to hear from you on that. Would you have any objections if you were sending someone off on a work trip and they said, you know what, I'd love to add on just a day after all the meetings are done, just so I could see the city, have a bit of me time, would you mind? Or would you be like, nah, you got to be back at work that day because I need you in to do emails?
Yeah, let us know, 4001. Now, we want to talk about Saturday jobs, which are the thing that I think, you know, you would do to save up for your holidays when we were teenagers way back when.
Do kids in Dubai have Saturday jobs?
I don't think they do. I don't think there's any Saturday jobs around.
I think they do these days. You know, you can take interns and stuff. I just think they do. I think I've been in cafes where there's kids working there on weekends.
Have you?
Not kids, like late teenagers. Yeah, definitely.
Okay.
What did you used to do? Did you have a Saturday job back
in the
day?
Yeah, I did. I might have told you this before. My Saturday job was in a fishing tackle shop. It was fishing tackle and tropical fish.
Oh.
So guys would come in wanting to buy the bait to go fishing, and it was maggots. So we had two big containers, buckets, massive buckets, filled with yellow maggots, one filled with pink maggots, and another one filled with chrysalis, which is just before they turn into flies.
Oh, you put me off me lunch.
So I would then they come in and say, a pint of yellow and a pint of chrysalis,
a pint,
please.
Is that how you'd measure maggots?
And it was actually in a pint pot.
Wow.
So you'd get a pint of maggots, they're all wriggling around, put them in his
What are you
going
to do with a pint of maggots, though? Is that not a lot of maggots?
No, yeah. Well, you actually throw some in, they ground bait it, so they throw some in to attract the fish, and then they put one on the hook, which has got the hook in, so, you know, the fish come round.
Goodness me, wouldn't you rather be one of the guys who gets thrown in? At least you've got a chance of survival. Can they swim?
Yeah, so that was my Saturday job.
Do you know much about maggots?
Well, I was quite an expert on maggots at the time.
Okay,
yeah.
So I've got some questions. Can they swim?
Maggots can swim, yeah. They wriggle, and I think they kind of go down to the bottom eventually.
But can they breathe underwater?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah. They've got two little black eyes.
You know what I'm imagining now?
What?
Imagining a pint glass full of maggots and all of them just going, hope it's not you, bruv, but I don't want it to me either. And Sharon over there, she doesn't deserve to be the one on the hook this time.
That guy's coming in with his pint pot for another pint of maggots. But another thing that I had to do on the Saturday job was catch tropical fish in the tank. So somebody had come in and said, oh, I love that angel fish over there. That's the one I want. So it was my job to get the net and try and catch them, you know, and sometimes they were so fast, these fish, it would take an eternity to catch them.
No one knew. I'm surprised you didn't use your fishing rod to get them out.
Yeah, that'd have been a good idea, wouldn't it?
My Saturday job, what did I used to do? I had paper round back in the day.
Yeah, a lot of my mates had paper rounds, yeah.
And I can remember the satisfaction of finishing your paper round. It was good. I did the W's. All the streets that started with W.
Okay.
And the bag would be so heavy at the beginning, and you'd have to get to the newspaper shop like at 6 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah, very early, wasn't it? Yeah. Any dogs bother you?
No, not too bad.
No.
You'd always let them have the paper. You wouldn't fight them, would you, when you took it through the letterbox? Yeah,
take it, Fido.
Rip it up, we don't care. But yeah, and it paid quite well as well, from what I remember. I think I got £6.
It was wonderful, that feeling when you got your wage packet, wasn't it?
Yeah, and it was about, that would be what, 35 dirhams now?
Yeah.
A week.
Great.
That I was on. Amazing.
Great. Loved it.
Loved it. So yeah, Saturday jobs. We asked a few of our lot here at Dubai Eye what they did for their Saturday jobs.
Yeah, this is Emma B.
I had several, actually. I used to work as a waitress in a local kind of inn, and I also worked at the restaurant in Debenhams when I was younger. That was my Saturday job. So lots of waitressing kind of stuff. Yeah.
I didn't have Emma down as a waitress, did you?
No, yeah. I didn't, actually.
Let's find out what Helen Farmer's Saturday job was.
My friends were waitressing and working in shops. I got a job at the local newspaper. So I had to go in and count letters for competition entries. I had to write letters as a so-called expert on certain topics. But mainly I was just getting McDonald's and buying cigarettes for the editors. It was a rude awakening for the world of work.
Outrageous. She used to write the letters as an expert.
I know. It's great, isn't it?
She's landed in the right role now.
Now we've got Jo, who's one of the producers on Helen's show Dubai Today. This is what she did for her Saturday job.
I'm a third culture kid, Mark, so I lived in Madrid, so there was no opportunities there. So my first Saturday job was when I started university, and it was quite fancy, actually. It was a shop on the King's Road selling clothes, fashion. And yes, I loved earning my money. And then after that job, I worked in Harvey Nichols in Knightsbridge. So it was great.
Very posh.
I would not have expected anything less from Jo.
Very, very posh indeed.
She weren't throwing chips around in McDonald's, was she?
She wasn't. Oh, doing the paper round. And what about Aisha, also producing Dubai Today?
My first job I had at a place called Dunn Stores, which had a magnificent kind of putrid green and navy viscosy uniform. And yeah, had a really horrible boss, but I used to love getting that, you know, check at the end of the week.
Oh, well, did you know that many parents actually disapprove of their teenage children having menial jobs when they could be focused on their schoolwork, they say. But a chap called Stephen Isherwood, who is the chief executive of the Institute of Student Employers, believes that Saturday jobs are actually crucial, you know?
Yeah, he says that they give vital experience of the world of work and professional skills. And he says, as well as teaching young people the value of money, which they can save to go on the first holiday with friends, that, you know, it's an all-round good experience.
A recent survey by the Institute, they analysed the shortfalls in business skills of graduates when they start work, the people who haven't had the Saturday jobs. The biggest skill gaps are working with others and also self-awareness. Like, I can remember in my first job being terrified to pick up the telephone and order photographs it would run out of because I'd have to speak to someone.
Yeah, yeah.
Just things that you're just not used to doing. And
definitely, yeah.
When you were a kid.
I remember in my first job, I was sat in a room full of women. This is my first real job in an office. And I was so nervous about even looking at them. It was just me in a room full of ladies. So anyway, managing expectations was number one on the list of challenges. Having a manager and colleagues, working in hierarchies, dealing with difficult people.
Like Mark.
And enduring long working hours in the same location were often new experiences for graduates and school leavers because they'd never been in a working environment.
Also, if you think about it, pulling shifts in restaurants, like Emma used to do, that involves dealing with demanding people. And you do get very demanding people in restaurants.
You do.
Learning that the customer is always right, no matter whether they're right or wrong, I think is a big lesson, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely.
So yes, Saturday jobs, wonderful lessons in life, love and small change.
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.